So I've been writing something, and I thought I would just talk a little bit about how the writing process has been going. So the thing I'm writing, it's a screenplay. It's a 30-minute screenplay meant to be like an episode of television. And the initial idea for the episode was just this one scene idea I had. And I couldn't really place the scene anywhere. I just knew I wanted this one scene. I didn't know anything else. And I think I was delaying writing it for a little bit because I was like, well, first I need to figure out like what comes before and after, because that'll indicate what I do for this scene. And then I realized if I just write the scene and not worry about that, then that scene will actually indicate what comes before and what comes after. And so I wrote the scene, and now I'm at this place where I'm starting to think of pieces that would fit around it, that would lead into it, and that would come out of it. And it's fun approaching it that way. I think writing and creating can be these little pieces that are sometimes out of order, and I'm sure, you know, countless artists will talk about that. I mean, not the only one who's discovered that it is in pieces, but I am experiencing it firsthand right now. And I really like existing in that space. I've been listening to music that makes me think about the scene, and watching stuff that might inspire me, and just trying to sort of stay in this inspired place. And it's really nice. And today's guest is very funny comedian Caitlin Palufo. And Caitlin and I feel like I relate to Caitlin in a way, because she also went to college for a different kind of art and then ended up doing stand-up. Because I went to music conservatory, I studied viola, and then I went to stand-up. She went to college for, I think, like video performance art. But she did that, and then she found stand-up after that. And I'm really interested in this journey that I think a lot of artists have, where they start in one medium, and then they find that they're more suited for another one. And it's like that creative place inside you is still there. It's just sort of finding the home for your creativity. And I have this book here that I've been reading. It's called Catching the Big Fish by David Lynch. The full title is Catching the Big Fish: Meditation, Consciousness, and Creativity. I highly recommend this book. It's just a lot of short little thoughts and essays that David Lynch, the filmmaker, has written. And I opened to a random page, and this is what I opened to, and I'll read it to you now. It's on page 13, in case you have the book, and it's called A Garden at Night by David Lynch. So I was a painter. I painted and I went to art school. I had no interest in film. I would go to a film sometimes, but I really just wanted to paint. One day, I was sitting in a big studio room at the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts. The room was divided into little cubicles. I was in my cubicle. It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I had a painting going, which was of a garden at night. It had a lot of black, with green plants emerging out of the darkness. All of a sudden, these plants started to move, and I heard a wind. I wasn't taking drugs. I thought, oh, how fantastic this is. And I began to wonder if film could be a way to make paintings move. All right, that's just a blurb from that chapter. I won't read the whole thing, but just what a wonderful moment of discovery when you're in one medium and then thinking about another one. And just as it makes sense for painting to possibly lead to film, because they're both visual mediums, I think it also makes sense for music to lead to comedy, which is what happened to me, because both are very aural mediums. And I've thought a lot about the connection between music and comedy and timing. And honestly, that's why this podcast is called Good Timing, because I feel like you need good timing in music and you need good timing in comedy. So there you have it. And I remember having a moment in a practice room where I was playing a piece on viola and thinking that something in it was kind of funny. You know, there was a humor to a certain entrance in the piece and maybe how it related to the piano part that I was playing with. And also I would, you know, give like pre-concert talks during my recitals and get a laugh during that. And I was like, oh, there's comedy in here too. And just sort of discovering humor within music, and now doing comedy, discovering the music within the comedy. I did a live show recently in Pennsylvania that was super fun. And it was kind of my first live show back with like a big crowd. It was this outdoor, very safe outdoor show, but it was like a huge audience under a dome. So it was the first time in a while that I was having like the real audience feedback to my jokes. And it was interesting because I realized how much timing is involved in terms of the audience laughter, and when the laughter ends, where do I time the next joke? Do I wait for the laughter to fully end before I start the next joke? Or do I sort of jump onto the laughter, try to keep the laughter rolling a little more? And to me, that feels very musical, very much like chamber music, playing with other musicians. I'm kind of playing with the audience. So that was a reminder of that. And I'm so excited to get to do more of that. And Caitlin and I talk about our journeys from one thing to another. She also was a very serious soccer player. So she talks about sports, and we connect how, you know, classical music and sports are related. And Caitlin has a really funny podcast called Good Time Gal. Similar title to this, Good Timing, very different podcast, very funny, highly recommend it. You can also follow Caitlin on Instagram at Caitlin Palufo. She is one of my favorite comics. She and I sort of started around the same time. I would run into her at open mics, and she was always just someone who would get up at the open mic and kill. And, you know, now she's a serious working comedian and very funny, and you should check out her stuff. She's got a set on Colbert you can watch on YouTube. And she's just a wonderful person. And if you are enjoying this podcast, as always, please consider telling a friend about it or liking it, subscribing, all the good things. I really appreciate that. Every little bit of support helps. And with that, please enjoy my conversation with Caitlin Palufo. But it's nice to see you, Caitlin. I actually weirdly saw you yesterday in person. I feel like I manifested you.
I know, right? It was very exciting. Oh, gosh. It was, I feel like we haven't seen each other in a year. And then all of a sudden, 2 days in a row, look at us. We're killing it.
I know. Well, I texted you and I was like, do you want to do my podcast? And then I saw you and I was like, that's the universe being like, I don't know, here, have a pregame of
podcast. Make sure you really want her on your podcast first.
I have to say, I had so much social anxiety. Like, I'm not used to like going and hanging at clubs anymore or anything.
Oh,
and especially like keeping,
Well, doing those like hangs in general are just always so nerve-wracking, just because you're like, you're self-conscious. It's like almost like walking into a club being like, I don't belong here. Oh my God, everybody's going to say you don't belong here. But like everybody has had to hang at a club. Like that is universal. Every comic has been like, I got to go hang at this fucking club and feel uncomfortable and awkward in front of my peers. So just know you're not alone.
Right. Well, do you struggle with social anxiety? I feel like if you do, you hide it really well. Like you power through it.
Yeah, social anxiety isn't so bad. Every once in a while, if I'm around people I respect, like comics that I respect, sometimes I'll get a little awkward around them and feel anxious. My anxiety comes purely from like succeeding. That makes sense. Like I went to a therapist and she told me that every time before I went on stage, I was having mini panic attacks. Like my palms would get sweaty. I'd hyperventilate. I couldn't stop talking to try and counteract it. My heart would race. I would get really, really like sweaty, and I would sometimes break out into hives. It was really bad. And she was like, yeah, that's a panic attack. You're having panic attacks 5 minutes before every time you go and do stand-up comedy. And it happened up until like maybe 2 years ago, every single time. and I would just pace and run around. I was like a crazy person. And so I didn't even have an opening joke half the time because I would just go on stage and be like, look at everybody. And then I would get a laugh and then go into my jokes. But I do get like anxiety, like hanging out at certain clubs. I get that anxiety of like, does anyone want to talk to me? Am I, you know, like.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. It's funny that we like, because I get so much performance anxiety before I go on stage still. And I know that it's, I just know it's not going to like negatively affect my performance as a stand-up now because you kind of like just use the energy or whatever. So it's fine. Yeah. But I like get the shaking and the sweaty palms and everything. And it's just funny that we like still are like, but I'm going to do this every night, even though this is like the thing that gives me a panic attack.
Exactly. Exactly. Like I was doing like a bunch of shows and every single time I was just like, am I taking years off my life by doing this?
Right.
Good Lord. It's just like, they say stress is the number one cause of cancer. And I'm just like, well, I'm going to have leukemia in 4 days. Like,
oh yeah, I'm a ball of cancer already. I mean, does anything
name
else?
Name of the podcast, ball of cancer.
Ball of cancer. Does anything else or has anything else in your life, like given you panic attacks in the way that performing has?
No, no.
Just
like, sometimes I would get really, nervous playing like before a big game in soccer, but that is like you have a 45-minute warm up and you just you're running and you're moving and you're constantly distracted. It's easier to get focused with sports because there is a clear objective. You know what I mean? Like the objective is to get the ball and shoot and score and win. Whereas comedy, it's like you go up there and you have no idea. You're half the time you're not even in control. You don't know the objective is to make them laugh in a very blatant way, but you don't exactly know how that's going to happen or what is going to make them laugh. So it's just like, whoa, I'm shooting blind.
Right. But I mean, you are like, you know, you're going to do like some specific jokes every night, but you just don't know. I guess, I don't know, with sports, you feel like it's just more clear, like, oh, I know that if I execute this way, then I will win or like do well.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's the uncertainty of the other team and how they're playing. That's sort of like the equivalent. But
now that I think about it, I think sports is a good analogy for stand-up because you're constantly, yeah, I take back everything I said. So
well, no, I know what you're saying. Like, I think it's both.
I think it's both because like, if you think about it, like sports, you literally, something happens and you react. It's a constant game of reacting, like something happening. And then you try and make a split decision. And that's what you're doing with stand-up, I guess. It's like everything is thrown at you and you're just kind of, okay, this is the joke they liked. I'm going to do this joke. Oh, they heckled me at this, so I can't finish this joke. I have to do this. And, you know, it's like another type of just reacting to a situation.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, your comedy is also like, I mean, you have like, I'd say you do more like crowd work and in the moment stuff than I do, for instance. Mm-hmm. Like you have a more in the moment style, I'd say, or more improvisatory elements to your act than I do, or you make it seem that way. And it works very well. It's very funny.
Oh, but thank you.
You're so funny, Caitlin.
Oh my God. I love this podcast. It's the best.
But, do you think, I mean, I know you, so how long were you playing soccer and how serious were you and when did you stop or do you still play or?
Oh my God. I played soccer since I was five and then I was very committed in junior high and high school. And then I played in college on the college team for a year and then played on the club team in college for 3 years. And it was, and that's when I kind of stopped. Sometimes I play like intramural or pickup league. And at one point during pickup league, I blew out my knee and I just started getting back into it. It's been about 5 years since I played and she's not what she once was. And it's still fun, but it definitely hurts my body more. But I played for so long, like 6 days a week, double days. Like it was a huge part of my life that when it went away, I was like, who am I? And so I feel like that's one of the reasons I didn't get into comedy until later.
Yeah. Was it the injury that kind of pulled you away from soccer more, or was it just wanting to do other things?
Just wanting to do other things. Like when you find out you're good at, I don't know. Well, you probably have this, like when you find out you're good at something at a young age, you kind of just get pushed into doing that. Both because, in my instance, it was like, my parents were like, hey, you're good at this. This could really help your life. in terms of college and stuff. And then also it was like the only positive feedback I was getting. So I wanted to keep that. So it was like this insidious loop. And then in college, after the first year, I ended up getting cut because I started, I discovered drinking in college. And boy, it was so fun. That was way more fun than going to soccer. When you get to like a certain level, you either decide that you really, really love it and it's worth the time and energy, or you find out that it's not what you want to do with the rest of your life. And you're like, oh, this is a hobby.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened in college. I kind of discovered that it was a hobby and that I would like to be social and have fun and not do double days for the next 3 years of my life.
I had the exact same experience with viola, with music. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like a positive thing in my life. I was good at it. I wasn't good at a lot of other things. I was like a slow reader. Like I just was bad at math. Like mm-hmm. I'm not like, same. I just didn't do well in school. Like, but I was like great at music. So I was like, well, mm-hmm. and I had all my friends at music school. I didn't really have friends at regular mm-hmm. school. And I was like, this is my thing. The thing about going to school for some, I mean, I loved music. And then when I got to conservatory where that was all it was, then I was like, oh shit, my escape is now all that there is. And it's not an escape yes. anymore. And it was just like, I totally, and I had an injury with my wrist. So it was mm-hmm. like, I was constantly like taking time off and like icing, having to like, you know, manage my practicing. And, mm-hmm. and yeah, I just realized this is not like something playing at like the level I would want to play at if I wanted viola to be my whole life was not going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah. And I thank God.
Yeah. Right.
If I forced myself to just battle through, I would be miserable. I definitely wouldn't be doing this. I'd be, cause I hate running. Running is a big part of soccer. I hate it with a passion. And it's like, so I was getting out of shape because I was like, well, I don't want to run. Like, so
right.
It was yeah. like, okay, do I want to run for the rest of my life? No, that sounds horrible. That sounds like hell.
Well, it's funny because no, I don't think anyone like, I mean, I guess runners, but who likes running? But I think if yeah. you like wanted to be a soccer player, you'd like put up with it. Kind of like how comedy mm-hmm. really sucks sometimes. Like I hate like hanging out at certain venues and like running from show to show and yeah. bombing, but I'm like so willing to do it because I yeah. love the other part so much.
Yeah, I think that's it. You have to find out finding out what your thing is. It's like you're willing to struggle so much in order to do it. Whereas with soccer, I was like, well, this sucks. I don't want to struggle to do something that is, I think is fine. You know, like I want to, like I'm willing to bomb just to do okay on a show just to keep going. If that means I get to keep doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And when you play soccer now, do you find that you maybe like enjoy it more because it's not your only thing? It doesn't have
no,
as much,
I no. don't like soccer.
You just I don't love, like it. Like,
I just like, it became so clear. I played for the first time like 2 weeks ago and we were going and I was like, I fucking hate this. I really like, I'm with my friends. This is the lowest stakes it could possibly be. And like, I'm running and I'm out of shape and I'm like, I fucking want to be done. I want to yeah. like, just plop me in the center and I'll shoot. Like, that's what I'd like to do. So yeah, no, I don't like it. And then I hurt my leg. I'm like, who the fuck? Oh, why am I doing this to myself? I'm going to finish because I don't quit. Okay. I said I was going to do 10 weeks. I'm going to do 10 weeks. But I pulled up my quad and I can't run. And I was like,
oh, man.
Well, this is, my body is just roasting me. It's just like, oh, remember when you used to do this all the time? And now you can't even do 10 minutes.
It's almost like your body is just being like, nope, this is not, like I always, this is maybe a little like mystical, but sometimes I wonder if like my wrist injury from viola was like mental. Like it was kind mm-hmm. of my brain being like, you don't want to do this. So, like you're going to, mm-hmm. your wrist is going to hurt. I don't know. Do you think yeah. that happened with your leg?
Oh, for sure. Because in college, or in high school, I tore my groin. I had a really bad groin injury and I ended up taking a lot of Advil and Tylenol and I came back too soon. And so it's always been on and off injury. And I was trying out for the team. And I told, it was hard and I was not having fun. And I was middle of the pack, you know, I definitely wasn't a standout, but I was like doing fine. But in my head, I was just like, it's because of my groin. It's because of my groin. And I swear to God, it just like made this groin injury reappear. And then I ended up getting redshirted. And
what's redshirted?
Redshirted means they have you, you're technically on the team, but you're you don't play in games so that you can qualify to play for an extra year. So they do that a lot with like people who are going to be doing 5-year programs like engineering and stuff like that. And they call it a super senior.
Okay.
It happens a lot with football. They'll have like a, they'll redshirt a freshman quarterback so that they can have a super senior quarterback who is a year older. And so basically they can train a quarterback longer. Anyway,
I thought it was like a red, you wear a red shirt. It's like Scorn, like the Scarlet Letter. Like I was red shirted.
It felt like it at times because like you're a red shirt and you're like just sitting on the sidelines and you're like, well, I can never play. And, but yeah, I mean like it was definitely, I think I just like didn't want, I was intimidated. I didn't want to play. I didn't love it enough to be like, put me in coach, that I was just like, I'm injured. You know what I mean? Like I'll be a red shirt. I don't, you know?
Right.
So I definitely get that. My body, I think saved me from 3 years of agony.
Yeah.
And, thank you. I'm looking at my crotch. Thank you so much.
Thanks, crotch.
Yeah.
Crotch is so nice. So thoughtful.
Yeah. I know. She's great.
Do you, and I know you also majored in like video performance art in school. Did that overlap with soccer or was that like the next thing? And then you went to comedy. How did that happen?
That was the next thing because once I got cut from the team, I was like, well, what am I good at? I don't even know what I like, you know, because I had no other hobbies except for sports. And so I ended up my sophomore year taking just a bunch of random classes. And one of them was a photography class. And I'd already liked photography. Like I had a camera, but I didn't know that it could be like your career, you know? And so I took that class and I was pretty good at it. And so I just kept going. And that's how I found photography. And then it turned into media arts and then video and experimental. And so I ended up doing that and majoring in that and then getting into grad school for that. So if I didn't stop doing soccer, there's no way I would have found that. I think I would have just been in sociology.
Like, right, right. I don't know, just some random like, major, like,
yeah,
like English lit.
Doing it. Yeah. I was like doing it to do it and just, all right. But
right,
it was not good.
I feel like a lot of times we find our things in that way where you're like, I didn't even know this was a thing. This was just something that I liked and was like, like I always liked being funny. I always enjoyed making my parents laugh. And like, if I had to like write a story for school, it would be like a funny story. But I didn't think of comedy as like something I could focus on until much later.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And then with comedy, I didn't start. I wanted to try it. And then 2 years later, I actually tried it because for some reason I got it in my head that everybody who did comedy went to school for theater, acting, writing, like something creative. And I was just like, well, I'm doing video performance art. Like, how does that art history? I have a MFA in art history and media. Like, what? There's no way that I could be a comedian. And then you go to an open mic and you realize, it does not matter. Anybody can get up there.
Oh yeah. That's the best part about like anytime someone wants to do comedy, I'm like, just go to an open mic. You'll know really quickly if you can like deal with that. Mm-hmm. You'll see like that it's not that scary because everyone else is, you know, just kind of weird and probably sucks. And
yeah. Half the time people are up there having a nervous breakdown and people are like, yeah, that's just Ted. He'll get through it. You know, like we'll see you Tuesday. Like no one sign me up at Autos, Ted. And Ted's like blinking twice. Girl, I'm going to get there. And it's just like, why not? Why not? So, why not, Ted? Why not you?
Before you did your first open mic, were you like nervous and did that keep you out? And then once you finally did it, it was good kind of thing.
Well, this is all so embarrassing. I, two things. Okay. The first thing, I went to an open mic and did not perform. And I went to a bad open mic and did not perform. I went to a New York Comedy Club, like 5:30 open mic and watched 25 comics go up and do 5-minute sets. I stayed for like 2 hours. It was a nightmare. It was very bad. And I dragged my boyfriend at the time to come and watch it with me. And they were like, here, did you sign up? And I was like, no. And they're like, what? I was like, I think half the people in the room thought I was industry because I was just like in the back watching and like taking notes like a loser.
Do you remember when mics used to be advertised as like industry mics? Like, oh, there's going to be industry there. Mm-hmm. You would have to like pay extra. And you're like, what? Now I'm like, what industry was there?
Yeah. Like, it's just like the intern at the comedy club is like running the mic. That's it. I'll put in a good word with the booker that I've never met. Like, that's...
Oh my God. But when you were... So you were like essentially just audience. Did the comics like find out? And did they do that thing where they were like, whoa, are you just audience at the open mic? Like, that's crazy. Like, did you get singled out?
I don't remember getting singled out. I just remember watching and being like horrified that this is how it was. Because you know how those things are. Like, the first 7 comics are all friends and they're the funny ones because they know people to sign them up early. And so they were really fun and really ruckus, and it was all men. I think there was maybe one woman, and it was really exciting. Like, oh, and I thought they were so funny and blah, blah, blah. Now looking back, I'm like, their jokes probably sucked. Like,
yeah.
And then it just became really sad. After that, people started leaving. By the end of the mic, there was one other person in the audience, and a guy was laying on the floor talking to the ceiling. Like, it was so weird. And I remember being like, what is this? Like, but it was a mixed bag. I was like, I could see how this would be really fun with your friends, but I was, that seems so far away. You know, being the top 7 would seem so far away.
It's funny because when I started doing mics, I feel like you were like a little bit ahead of me time-wise, and you were in that like crew at like the Grizzly Pear where you knew the host, and like you were kind of, I was always like, oh, Caitlin. And like, you know, you were always really funny, and like I like looked up to you as like one of the like cool kids at the open mic.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you know this, but I'm pretty big on the Grizzly Pear open mic scene. Hashtag legend.
For people listening, Kate, you know, we're not, Caitlin is far past that now, but I'm referring to like, you know, 6 years ago.
Am I, Isabel?
Yes,
am I?
Yes,
mean,
you are.
There are days where I'm like, just make me quit. Like,
oh yeah, I know. I know the feeling.
It's like, it depends on the day. Get me on a day that it's just not happening and put me right back at the Grizzly Bear open mic.
It really is like a day by day thing. And it's such a stark contrast.
Mm-hmm.
I have days where I feel totally okay. And then I have days where I'm like, do I know how to talk in front of audience? 100%. In front of anyone?
100%. I was like, why on earth did I ever think this was funny? Who could have thought this was funny? You big dumb idiot. You're offending everybody. And then the next day you're like, I'm a genius. I think I just did Def Jam up there. I fucking crushed, you know, like, and then it goes back and forth. I feel like I was very lucky to do opposite ends of the spectrum before I did comedy. Like I did soccer, where you can be good. Like if you're good, you will win. Like, you know, like you can develop enough skill and you can blatantly be better than other people. And
it's not subjective.
It's not subjective. It's repetitive. It's you keep doing it over and over again. It's muscle memory. It's conditioning. It's discipline. And then you go to art and it's just like, well, how do you feel? Like, it's very subjective. People think other things are trash. There's no rhyme or reason to anything. And you could be wrong, but if you just explain yourself better than the other person, then you win. You know what I mean? So it's like comedy is a perfect blend of those two things because comedy is still subjective. No matter what we'd like to think, it's still subjective, 100%. It's an audience by audience basis. But if you do it over and over again, and if you have the discipline, and if you... you know, maintain a schedule and condition yourself, you can get better at it. But it's still subjective. You're still succumbing to the art, you know?
I've never thought, that's such a good way to put it. And it's like objective night by night, but like overall it's subjective. Mm-hmm. Because yeah, like you can't fake if you did, like if you bomb at a show and I'm like, you did great. Like, you know that I'm lying because like people either laughed or they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But like with art, it's like, well, no, I like really felt some, you know, you can't be like, oh, I thought it was really interesting, the jokes you did, you know, like they're either funny or they're not. And I relate so much because with like classical music, it's like kind of a sport. It's like accuracy over a lot of other things. But then I got into playing like a lot of really avant-garde, weird music where it's like, you know, super abstract and it's totally like, who knows if this is like good or bad. And I got really fed up with it, but I had that side of it as well. And so did you enjoy like doing the video performance art at all? Was there a point where you were like, this is my thing? Or were you always like, what am I doing?
I enjoyed it in that I enjoy creating. Like when you're a creative person, you like the act of creating something. I enjoyed making the videos. I enjoyed editing the videos, and I enjoyed most of all showing the videos that were good. You know, I loved hearing I loved that positive reinforcement. You know, I need it. So that was always fun. But I think deep down I knew the whole time that this wasn't going to be my thing, because I went to grad school in New York City. I went to Pratt, and it's it's a very good program, very competitive, and it has a big class. Usually there's like a MFA program will have 20 students, and this one had like 50, you know, so it was a big competitive environment. And you could tell that some people really knew their stuff and were really immersed in the art world. And I wasn't that, and I wasn't willing to do that kind of. Same with soccer. I wasn't willing to put in the extra effort to become first. And also there's something that is like, it doesn't stick if it's not your passion. You know what I mean? Like it won't, you can read all the books in the world, but you might have to read the same thing over and over again just to try and memorize that fact, just because you don't care about it. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, who is that person again? I don't fucking care. So why am I going to remember, you know?
Yeah, I'm a slow reader, but if I'm reading a book that I'm really into, I like get through it just fine. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's really more if I care about the book.
Exactly. 100%. And like every time I read an art book, I was just like, this is homework. This is homework. But now like with comedy, I enjoy going to shows and watching comedy. I've always enjoyed it. Like growing up, I loved Dane Cook. Who didn't? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love Chelsea Handler. I love Dave Attell. Dave Attell is still just number one in my heart. And it's just like, I loved it. And I memorized the lines. And I didn't realize it until I started doing comedy that was, oh, this is my thing. Because I could recite to you the entire Skanks for the Memories album by Dave Attell. And I didn't even try to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Again, it's like the thing, you don't think it's something, it's like so obvious almost that you love it, that you don't even think about it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like with relationships. I feel like you hear people where it's like, we were just like friends forever. And then we were just like, oh, we like love each other. Let's be together.
Yeah. That's me and Steve. Like we were friends for a couple of years, and then we were just like, we both became single at the same time and got drunk. And we were like, oh yeah, this makes sense. This is
right.
Boo. Yeah. What were we doing before? This is
a beautiful story.
Oh, I know. That's how all of my love stories start. I was drunk and I was like, we should fuck.
would you like recite comedy to your family? I used to like memorize street jokes and tell them to adults and then.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. In middle school, I was always the one trying to tell the dirty jokes, you know, the sex jokes. And, yeah, my dad would tell jokes constantly and I would remember those and tell them to my friends. My dad was always funny and always had jokes and he was silly. And now I realize that my mom was also, she was like his hype man almost, you know, like his Andy Richter to the Conan. Like they were quite it was very, very funny in her own right. But I remember, and then I would like say Dane Cook jokes and I would do the act out of the Kool-Aid man. I was just, and then Tommy Boy was my favorite movie. And so I would just ham it up. And my sisters and I, we would like reenact Tommy Boy scenes. It was Well, it was like so obvious. Obviously, yeah. You're going to do comedy.
And then what? How old were you when you went to your first open mic? When did that actually happen?
I went when I was 25, 26, and didn't start until the day before my 27th birthday.
Are you a lot? You're like a lot older than you look.
Thank you so much.
I just did the math in my head. I was like, huh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Thank you. I do look great. And
you look on, as we talked about in the beginning.
Yeah, I know. I do. Yeah, I got that filter on my Zoom. So we're not.
Do you have a filter
around.
On it?
No.
Is that a thing?
No. There's like you can make it glammy. I don't even know. I forget what it's called. But there is a, if you go to video settings, touch up my appearance.
Whoa.
You put that on there. Mine's just in the middle. You know, I'm not trying to lie to anybody. But it's not all the way up. I do look good.
you do.
But I started later. And it was just because I get so intimidated sometimes just by starting something new. Anything new intimidates me to an extreme. And it's always been that way. So I'm trying to get out of that because obviously it's not helping me. You know, it's just I'm nervous for no reason. It always ends. Everything in my past has told me that it ends up fine. You know what I mean? Like it's gonna be fine. And for some reason I hang out at somewhere like the Cellar and I'm like, well, the sky is falling and everybody hates me. And but it's like, no one gives a shit. Everybody's in their own little world. So
also there's going to be a point in like, you know, a few years where you're at the Cellar because you're normally at the Cellar and you're just like, remember when I was like afraid of this? Like, mm-hmm. That's so silly. This is so like boring and normal now.
Yeah. Like that's how it is with New York and the Stand. It's just like, I used to be so intimidated by those places. And now it's just like, now they pay half of my rent. Like wonderful.
Right.
It's crazy. But I feel like that's just the natural progression of, following a passion.
Yeah. So. I starting something new is really intimidating. I also like, it's kind of exactly what I needed when I was in my early 20s and like feeling like I was going nowhere with music and had just been doing that for so long. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden having something where you can like make tangible improvements at, mm-hmm. cause when you're a beginner, it's like you suck and then you don't suck mm-hmm. rather than like you're good. And then you get a tiny bit better every, like now when we make improvements in comedy, it's not like we can really notice it month to month necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like maybe one bit has gotten better, but I'm not like, whoa, I'm like,
yeah,
good now. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying.
No, I totally agree. It's just like, it's so, I watched my first stand-up set ever at the beginning of the pandemic. And I was like, that's when you can really tell like, oh, how far I've come. Because I was up there and I didn't move. And you've seen me perform. I'm everywhere. Everywhere.
Oh,
I'm sitting in laps. I'm fucking crazy. And I was up there like, this is my shirt. And it's very... it's flannel. Like I just, it was so bad.
I can't imagine you not moving on stage. You're a very athletic comedian. It makes sense because you're an athlete. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. I'm very, permanent squat on stage. Just,
I still stand completely still when I do comedy, but I think that's never going to change for me. I don't think I'll ever.
It also fits you. You know what I mean? It fits your joke style. It fits, you know, it when you're up there, people aren't like, she's not moving. You know what I mean? Like, it would be crazy if I went on stage and I didn't move and I was just like, yeah, so I'm a really practical girl. And it would just be crazy if I just stood still.
I'm a beast.
Yeah, I'm a beast who is paralyzed. I be insane. So I think it definitely just fits your persona.
Right. You get your, but so you said you used to have panic attacks on stage mm-hmm. and then like up to like 2 years ago, did something like, did you just sort of like get it all out by going up enough, or what happened? What shifted?
It still happens every once in a while, like especially before like a big set. I think Colbert helped a lot.
Mm. Yes, your Colbert set is very good. Anyone listening, go check it out.
Oh, thank you. But that was like my biggest opportunity, and I treated it like a sporting event, and I just did repetitions that. We've taped it on Friday and between Monday and Thursday, I did 30 sets and I just ran it 30 times. And I went up and I said the first line and it all just came. Like it just, I didn't even have to think about it. And once I think once I realized I did that and I could do that and I came out and I didn't hate it. I only watched it. I think I've watched the whole thing twice in my life because it is mortifying. Just because watching yourself do anything is mortifying. Yeah. I don't understand people who are just like, yeah, it's easy to watch my sets.
No, and I like even editing my podcast every week, I'm like, all right, I have to fucking listen to my voice again for another hour.
As you listen to your podcast? God bless you. I put it up there.
I'm like, you know, I like to edit and like get, you know, take out like some, a lot of times I say things and I'm like, I shouldn't have said that. And then I make it sound better than it was.
Good for you. I don't have the patience. I'm very much a just, well, that's what happened. So here you go.
I mean, I think that's a healthy attitude. You know, I live in a lot of fear of, I don't know what exactly, just of being, of existing. And so I micromanage a lot of things.
Well, that's also half being a woman. So don't worry.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy.
We are women.
Yeah, Caitlin. We are women. We apologize.
Women so. In comedy. I always kind of liked being like the one woman at the open mic though, because I felt like, I don't know, it was like, it was something to help me like stand out, even though a lot of people might have been like, oh, but that's like hard. You know, you have to like deal with all these like hungry, breathing men all over your whatever. But I was just like, oh, thank God. I like, at least I'm not just like another guy going up there. And I kind of enjoyed that.
It's funny. I had the same, like I was telling someone, I forget who it was, but I was like, I don't mind. I was telling Jordan Jensen, very funny comedian. Yes. She and I were talking about shows and I was like, I don't mind being the only woman on a show because I know that I will do well just because I am different. No matter what, I am different and I will stand out. But I also, it's like on the same side of that coin, I hate that I'm the only woman on the show because that means my friends are not getting spots. And right. That is infuriating. You know, it's like being any kind of token, you know?
Yes. I know. You're like, really? Like I see lineups where I'm the one woman and I'm like, I know exactly what happened. They were like, oh fuck, we got to get a woman on here. Isabel's funny. Yeah. Throw her up.
She's
like,
got a credit. Let's do that.
Yeah. It's just like fuck. And you're, and it's just, it's so silly because there are just so many of us now.
There's so many of us and there's so many funny ones. And now there was like a boom like 3 years ago where everybody wanted women. And so a lot of women have gotten really, really good, really, really fast and gotten credits. And so it's literally like you could have an amazing show if you just booked more than one woman. And no, it's some random fucking dude that no one's heard of who has a show in Poughkeepsie that you want to get, you know, like it's just, what are you doing? Like, and it's, there's no excuses now. Like before, like 10 years ago, they were like, there are no women doing comedy, even though we all know that's not true. But now it's just like, oh, it is blatantly clear that there are hundreds of women in New York City alone doing stand-up comedy with credits who are very good.
Yeah.
And you're just not putting in any effort. You know what I mean? Especially with male bookers. With male bookers, they're like, well, I don't get it. And it's just like, well, yeah, you're a man. So half the time you're going to think a man's point of view is funnier because you relate to it more. But remember, half of your audience is a woman.
Like a lot of straight couples go on dates to comedy clubs. It's like a very typical archetypal audience member. So half the audience is going to be a woman.
Yeah. And so it's like they're just trying to build a show based on their own taste, but not in the taste of their audience. And it's just... it's lazy, in my opinion. Yeah, I said it.
We're really breaking the glass ceiling with this podcast
episode.
We're fixing
sexism.
You've always been really supportive, though. I remember I was like running. I was trying to run a late night set. That one didn't end up happening. But then I did another one. Mm-hmm. But you were like helping me. You were like, oh, you should reach out to this person and this person to like get on their show. Mm-hmm. And we were like sitting at the back room of another show. And I was like, okay, I just emailed this person. And I like showed you my email. And you were like, good God, Isabel, that is not a good email. You were like, what is this? It's like a sociopath's email.
I remember it was like three paragraphs long. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing? I was just say, I'm running a set for Fallon. Do you have 5 minutes on your show? Like, that's literally all you have to do. Because it's like a no-brainer. It's like, oh, great. It's going to be good jokes. And it's a short set. It's so easy. But you were right. Like, I'm originally from Tribeca, New York.
I was like, I completely understand if you don't have the time. I know there are many, many comedians.
Oh my God. I live and die by no worries either way. Like, that's.
Oh my God. I almost, when I texted you to be on this podcast, I think I almost typed that and I was like, wait, it's Caitlin. Like, be a normal human being. I was almost like, thanks either way. Hope all is well. Like,
you're like, you could have just been like, hey, do my podcast, bitch. And I'd be like, all right.
Well, it's weird. You know, there's people like you where it's like, when I see you, I feel like we're like close, but then I also don't go, I don't see you for a while. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, well now I'm like hitting her up for like a favor. And I get like self-conscious because I'm like, I want to like be friends and everybody's like, okay, well right now I do want this thing from you.
Oh,
and it's,
yeah.
Like, how do you balance like the,
it's just normal. You know, it's part of, it's every comic goes through it. I think it's just a normal part of trying to, like, again, create. It goes all the way back to just trying to be a creative person. Every creative person understands that you have to do these things. And so, and we're all busy. Like,
right.
It's also a pandemic, Isabel. Like, we're legally not allowed to hang out. Like, it's just, it's
true.
So you just shoot your shot because everybody's going to, if you don't shoot it, someone else is going to shoot it. You know what I mean? So you just do it. Why not?
I like
a man
to think
wouldn't
that's
think
your...
twice, Isabel. A man would not think twice. The amount of messages I've gotten from men who are just like, can I open for you? And I'm like, I've never seen you or met you before. Like,
oh yeah. I've gotten messages like, hey, can I do your podcast? Just like blank, like just no, like, yeah. Hey, I would love to sometime if you ever, or, you
or
know,
here's
like,
a bio, here's a tape. This is my, like nothing. Just, right, I'd love right. to do it. Thanks. Have a nice time.
Yeah, you're welcome for me reaching out.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, that's not how this works. Okay.
Right.
But yeah, never. But that's, you know, I feel like with women in comedy, we go through a lot of the same struggles. So we're already kindred spirits. So when we do run into each other for the first time in 8 months, it's just like it never, we have that bond, that base level bond. And it is, just always going to go back to being quick fun. You know what I mean? Right.
It is.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what happened last night. It was quick fun.
quick fun. You know, yeah, we hung out indoors. Uh-oh.
But you wore your mask the entire time.
Well, I'm not vaccinated yet. So.
Oh, yeah. See, I got that half vax.
Yeah, yeah. Last thing, when I wanted to ask, because, you know, you said, oh, God, I'm really not sticking the landing here.
Oh, this is the part she's going to edit out. I know
exactly.
It.
This is going to be edited out. Or sometimes I do a cute thing where I'm like, I'm going to edit this out. And then I leave it in. So the listeners think they're getting like a cool, unedited, authentic thing.
Oh,
I'm just,
yeah.
It's all
keep
fake.
That part in. Come on. Let them know
I'm
they're
a real phony.
Played.
I'm a real phony. But what I wanted to know is, when you write jokes, are you more like a on stage writer, or do you like hash everything out really like beforehand? I know everyone's different about that.
I'm a mixture of the two. I wish I could just sit down and be like, here is a joke. And I write it out and like, done. I fixed it. You know, like, I'm not that person. I'll come up with a premise or a line that I think is funny. And then I'll go on stage and I'll riff about it. And that's how I can. And then I find it. Like, half of my Colbert are just riffs that I honed, you know?
Right.
And then I write it down. And then I, you know, go through that and try and make it as clean and tight as possible. But it definitely is not a sit down and write it out. It's a premise. And then half the time I'm just talking to Steve and Steve's like, that's a bit, write it down. And I'm like, all right. And then I'll riff about it. And then I'll find a line that I like, and then I'll build the joke around that line. And, like it happened last night, I was driving home after a joke that I do, like the first part is done. And then I was like, I always wanted to add this little extra. And I'm just talking to myself in my car, like blah, 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 blah. And then I found a line that I like. So now I'm going to try and build the second half of that joke around that line. And I'll tell you the line, but I won't tell you the joke. It's like,
okay,
the line is, I'm fucking for safety. That's it. Okay. See, it's a funny line. It's quick. Oh, it's to the point.
That's so fun.
It's like finding a tag before the joke. Almost.
Yeah. I feel like I could almost figure out what your bit is going to be because of that. Just because I know you're, I'm not going to right now. That's so, I feel like that could be like a fun game. Yeah. That's also the good thing about dating a comedian, because like you can trust him when he's like, that's a bit. Mm-hmm. Like I'm dating a musician and sometimes I say something, he's like, is that going to be a bit? And I'm like, no, idiot. Like,
you dumbass. How dare you stick to fucking music?
And so, yeah, but a lot of times my funniest stuff comes from me just talking out loud. I do write a lot down and then I end up like not using it, but it's just sort of like, oh, I should try to write. If I just like talk.
It's just talking. And then it's also the panic of being on stage and feeling that nervousness of trying to make people laugh. And so you say, I say things that are rapid fire and I wait. I like say all of it and see what hits. And it's like, and that comes from that panic attack that I'm having right before. It's like, say something funny, make them laugh. And that searches an extra part of your brain that finds, unfortunately, half the time it's like, and then he put it in my butt. Like that's how
you're like, shit.
Half of the jokes end if I fail. You know what I mean? They're like, she's really into butt stuff. I'm like, I know, I'm just trying to find an ending to a joke. That's it.
Well, that's the fun. When you're like getting together your first hour and you're like going through all your jokes you have and you're like, I got a lot of poop stuff. All right. Well, you got to diversify a little.
It's a lot of sex stuff. I have a lot of sex stuff and a lot of I'm a big gal stuff. So, even though I'm not that big, but I feel huge always.
I know, but you become like this, like mine is like a lot about like me being like very sad and I'm like, I'm not that sad. Like, I'm okay. But I guess I'm sad as a performer because that's what all my jokes are about. So
I know. I always say like, oh, I'm this big lumberjack bitch. And I'm like, I have a toned stomach. Like, what the fuck am I talking about?
You have beautifully tweezed eyebrows.
Thank you. My eyebrows are perfect. Okay. I wax my sideburns for the love of God. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to be a pretty girl.
Yeah.
Just like, no, I'm a hideous lumberjack. That's not what people see right now. They see your okay face and your medium body. I'm a huge beast.
You're a lovely woman. And
thank you. No, I'm hideous. I gotta stay on brand.
I know. And then the audience is like, I guess she's a big lumberjack. I don't know. We didn't. Okay.
I have people come up to me all the time after shows and they'll be like, you know, you're not that big. And I always want to be like, well, that's not a compliment either.
Right.
Like, you're not that big. Well, I'm still a little huge then. That's what you're telling me. A tiny giant. Thank you so much.
It's so audiences think that they're helping you by saying anything to you after your set. And it's just say it was funny and go home. Mm-hmm. Do not say anything else. Don't say I could never do that because we know you could never do that.
Yeah.
Don't say you were no, because you'd be doing it.
Yeah.
Don't say you were like really, I've never seen a funny girl before. Don't say that.
Oh, that drives me nuts. The amount of rage I get when a woman comes up to me. I usually don't like female comics, but I thought you were great. I just want to be like, who hurt you? What happened to where you hate yourself so much that you, it just makes me so mad.
I guess I wouldn't mind if a woman was like, I've never seen a female comedian before. And that opened my eyes. I'd be like, I'm glad you finally came out from under the rock you were under. But
you know, I'm glad this, this club has finally, opened up its situation to where you would be like, a lady's funny. This is nuts. It's not even Roseanne. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, Caitlin, it's been such a pleasure having you, and I'm so excited to see you more in person now too. This is like a nice little amuse-bouche for what's coming.
Where do you live? Do you live in Astoria?
I'm in Brooklyn. I feel like all the comics are in Astoria.
Well, I'm in Brooklyn right now, and I feel like all the comics are in Brooklyn. So,
maybe I just don't have a lot of friends.
shit. We were ending on a high and now it's sad again.
Invite me to the Brooklyn hangs and I'll...
How on brand for you, Isabel? Just being sad.
Just sad and awkward. And,
no, know. Yeah. Well, we're not moving up to Astoria until May. So
okay,
we'll have to have you over for a few hangs. Where? I guess I shouldn't say it on the podcast, but
this is why I edit.
Give
the
me
podcast.
Your address.
I'll tell you the address after we end the official podcast, yeah. And I'm going to do that right now, Caitlin. You've been such a, I love you. And
I love you too. I'm so glad you reached out and asked me to do this podcast.
Thank you either way, but I'm just glad.
Either way, this was fun. So thank you. If you don't want to use any of this conversation, I totally get it. But like,
just no worries at
happy
all.
Happy to know you. No worries. Bye.
Okay. All right. Take care. Okay. All right. It's over. Thank you for listening. For more, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. Both at @IsabelHagen_ and sign up for my mailing list at IsabelHagen.com. And as always, please rate and review the podcast. Thank you so much and take care.